everyone, and welcome to the Third Degree Christmas Special. I'm Libby.
And I'm Dominic.
And we've got a few different things coming up on the show this Christmas Day. We're going to be talking to Renata about how to eat Christmas foods sustainably and how to have an ethical Christmas, and a few other stories coming up. But first of all, we're joined by a couple of people from the Pete's Ridge Festival, which is happening this New Year's.
We've got Claudia Santangelo.
Hello.
Hello.
Claudia, what's your role with the Pete's Ridge Festival?
I'm the art producer for Pete's Ridge Festival. So I look after all the installation artists and robing and theatre and multimedia space.
And more on the sustainability tip, we've got Tim Barker. And who do you represent?
Hi there. I'm part of a couple of different organisations. I'm part of Regenerate and Figure Eight, who work very closely together. We run sustainable events companies. So, yeah, we're Cytopad Sound Systems and sort of, you know, work on how to make events more sustainable.
So maybe, Tim and Claudia, if you wanted to just give us a bit of a rundown on what's happening at the festival this year?
Lots of stuff, I suppose.
There's heaps of different stages. There's over 200 bands playing, lots of local acts and also a lot of international acts, and sort of big names like Salmonella Dub and John Cleary, and then you've got great local stuff like the Phonies, Rum Punch, Bakery, that sort of vibe. There's also a sort of dedicated arts precinct this year, which wasn't there before, so we've got a whole bunch of different artist collectives like Port Collective and Token, Reef Knot, who are joining together for, yeah, a lot of fun. And then there's also, which is the space that Tim looks after, which is called the Land of Hopeless Utopians. And it's a big geodesic dome that's going to have amazing 360 projections inside and out and a whole bunch of good stuff going on in there.
Can one of you explain geodesic for us?
Yeah.
Can you use words?
Geodesic domes, they were invented by a man called Buckminster Fuller, who's actually what the space is named after. And his mission in life was to sort of make life easier for humanity and sustain humanity on this earth sort of thing. And part of what he came up, his most famous invention was the geodesic dome, which is based on a geometric pattern, basically. And there's different frequencies of domes. And, yeah, it's, I suppose you have to see it. It's hard to explain it. You have to see one.
I understand this because I've walked through the dome. And if you walk through the dome at different points and you say the same thing or make the same noise, basically the sound's bouncing back to you in a different way and you get different levels of what the layman might call echo or reverberation.
Yeah, the reverb's pretty crazy in there. It's sort of like it's an echo of the universe, really. You're in a perfectly spherical structure and the universe works on that spherical pattern, doesn't it? Like, you know, planets orbiting suns, galaxies, that sort of thing. And that goes down to the smallest thing we know about, molecules and atoms. So, yeah, the dome, you're like kind of, it just replicates the universe, really. So it's weird space.
You have to see it to believe it.
Yeah.
And how big is the dome?
It's about 13 and a half metres across. Well, it's exactly 13 and a half metres across, to be honest. Yeah, 7 metres high in the middle. You can fit about 150 people in there, 200 people, if you at a squeeze.
Cool. And is that dome, is that solar powered?
Or? The audio is going to be solar powered. The projection and lighting, unfortunately, won't be at this stage. Hopefully that will be something that will happen in the future when we can afford to get another battery pack.
But the whole festival is run on biodiesel, so there's generators, you know, every other space besides the dome uses generators, but all those generators are biodiesel, which is really good. And in terms of festivals, Pete's Ridge makes a very, very small footprint compared to other big events on that sort of scale.
Cool. Could you, yeah, maybe go through a little bit more about other aspects of this festival that are sustainable?
They do. I mean, we've got a sustainability officer who's probably the best person to sort of give you all the details. But stuff like, I mean, getting groups like Regenerate and Figure Eight on board who specialise in sustainable production is one thing. Also, making sure that all plates, cutlery, are all biodegradable. So all the market stalls and everyone there has to purchase these biodegradable cups. There's very strict recycling systems there. So there's sort of big, colourful bins encouraging people to sort their waste properly. And if people don't do them themselves, there's a whole host of fabulous volunteers who will sort through your waste for you to make sure it's, to make sure it's sorted. I mean, and small things too, I guess, like the way that they sort of lay out the site and, you know, thinking about the wildlife and the fauna and foliage around it and things like that.
Mm. There's another aspect, Claudie, I forgot to mention there. Mm. Like they actually recycle all the poo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The compostable toilet.
Does the toilet.
It's a natural event. But, yeah, yeah, I think they compost all the poo and then they use it on the land through the year to grow stuff.
Because the landowner's brother has an organic farm up the road in the garden, so they use all the festival poo to make things grow, which is great. And there's no port-a-loos at all. It's all compostable toilets this year, which is great.
Oh, that's lovely, yeah.
No, it's so much more pleasant than port-a-loos.
You mentioned regenerate before, and I happen to know, you told me earlier, Tim, that you were one of the founding members, I suppose, of Regenerate. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that was me and my partner, Jen. Hello, Jen. Jen and I have had this idea for years and years after travelling through the desert in Australia and meeting the Lab Rats guys, Combat Wombat guys. And they had solar power PA and stuff like that. So we were really taken with that idea and wanted to create a cafe called the Regenerate Cafe and have a very small PA in a kind of circus tent thing. And there we realised we couldn't power coffee machines or fridges or anything else that you need to make food on a big scale from solar, because they all just use so much power. So it all transformed from that to then a sort of more of a production company, which is, we ended up getting a dome and a big PA and big battery pack to power all of that stuff. And yeah, it's kind of gone from there, really. And it's good. And we've now kind of linked up with Figure Eight, and we're sort of conjoined twins in a way, as businesses go.
What's Figure Eight?
Figure Eight's a collective of now 16 people who immediately live and work together, but there's a much wider community involved in Figure Eight as well. Like, lots of the people we know support us by volunteering and helping us out. We're based in Marrickville, and we basically work on all sorts of different events, community events, from DIY markets to whatever goes on, really. And people, like, a lot of protests and stuff like that happen. We supply PAs for that. We try, wherever we can, run them off solar power. It's not always appropriate to do that. It's not always possible to do that. Then we do work on a lot of council events as well for City of Sydney and Waverley Council, stuff like that. And then going on to much bigger events, like festivals, basically.
Splendour in the Grass.
Yeah, Pete's Ridge. I suppose Regenerate and Figure Eight kind of thing just gets confusing. As a collective, we just work on lots of cool stuff. And we're working currently on our own festival as well. We're trying to get our own festival off the ground called High and Dry. Which will be sometime next year. Can't tell you exactly when, because we don't know ourselves yet.
For all those High and Dry people who got our email, we did say over the April long weekend, it might be pushed back a bit later, but it is going to happen.
Mm. Sure. Yeah, so that's like a huge project it's on the back burner a bit at the moment because of Pete's Ridge.
Will that be the first thing that you regenerate, Figure Eight, whichever one you want to get to, sort of organise yourself, as in sort of 100% done by you guys?
Sort of. We do organise our own events in the city and stuff like that, but not really on the sort of scale of High and Dry. High and Dry will be pretty large.
Are we talking 5,000 people?
No, not that many. We want to keep it smaller and more intimate, and gets complicated. The more people you have, the more sort of red tape you have to deal with, and the more sort of complicated laws get involved in it. And we just want to keep it really small and friendly anyway, and you know, just, it's nice to have an intimate little thing with a couple of thousand people.
How's that going to differ from Pete's Ridge this year? How many people?
I think they've got 5,000, something like that.
Yeah, 5,000 to 6,000 for Pete's Ridge Festival this year, which is quite a nice number, I think.
I think so too. It'd be very intimate. It's really lovely.
Can we maybe talk a little bit about the importance of making sure festivals are sustainable and working towards that as best we can, and why that's a good thing to do?
It's a pretty wasteful industry as a whole, and that goes through to all sorts of events, not just festivals. It goes to, you know, horse sporting events or exhibitions or whatever happens. You know, there's a lot of packaging involved in a lot of things that just gets thrown away, and there's very little recycling through this whole industry. And let's face it, they're all pretty self-indulgent things, really. They're not necessary for survival. They're fun. They're a recreational pastime. So they should happen in a responsible way. And therefore, if you're going to put on an event, you need to really consider the impact of that event on the local environment, the local people who live there, the local wildlife, the roads on the way in, all the people that are going to pass through the areas there on the way there. And this sort of, you know, the emissions you create while doing it and the waste that's created, because there's a lot of waste involved in festivals in particular. People go there and drink a lot of stuff and eat a lot of things. And, you know, it's packaging builds up. And, you know, we're running out of space for landfill as it is. So, you know, it's Pete's Ridge is definitely sort of the leading event in this field, I'd say. they're really, really pushing the boundaries and sort of paving the way in a lot of ways. And, you know, a lot of bigger events could do well to look at their policies and try and take them on board, I think.
And I also think, too, that festivals can be really powerful to sort of spread a message as well, because you get these, you know, thousands of people outside of their, you know, normal boundaries, and everyone's sort of let down, you know, and got a bit loose and trying new things and all that sort of stuff. And if you're getting a message across there about sustainable living, then I think there's a, you know, good chance that people are going to take that back to their everyday as well. Yeah, I think big community events like that, when you do feel a real sense of community, then, you know, you can really use it as a vehicle for social change in a lot of ways. It's a good tool.
Mm. And you're involved a lot in the arts precinct, and you mentioned community art groups before. Mm. Can you explain a little bit about how that works, and maybe even how that's sort of connected to that same idea of community building?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, events like Pete's Ridge Festival are a really good opportunity for these really active community groups to all come together and celebrate and showcase what they do. And, you know, you've got a lot of groups like Reef Knot, for example, who the sort of saying is, whoever invented landfill had no imagination. So all their artworks is used from reused and recycled materials. Yeah, so I guess, you know, it gives people an opportunity to work and be in one area with all these collective groups of people, and in an amazing environment too. You know, usually this sort of stuff is inside gallery spaces, or, you know, sometimes the art can come onto the street and stuff like that as well. But it's a great opportunity to bring all these imaginative ideas into one, and then also in this beautiful space. And it's good for networking and building and all that sort of stuff, and feeling part of a community too.
And this year the punters get to get up themselves and demonstrate their talents at the
Peach Punter talent show. But it's also great for, you know, Peach Ridge gives a lot of really new emerging artists a really good chance as well. You know, you have a lot of, you know, high profile and very established artists. You also get a lot of people who are just sort of starting to be artists or musicians or whatever it is. And Peach Ridge is a really great environment for those sort of artists to, yeah, to put it out there and see how it goes, which is good. It's good to support the arts in general.
How long has Pete's Ridge actually been around for?
It's the fifth year, but only four have actually happened, because last year it was very unfortunately cancelled.
Sure. Mm. And has it always been something that it's as far as long as you've been involved, I guess, has it always been something that's tried to do it sustainably?
Yeah, definitely. Matt Grant, who's the festival director, started the festival specifically to create a sustainable event. He's always been very interested in festivals and events, but was also really, you know, getting increasingly concerned about global warming and climate change, and wanted to actively do something to make a difference, really. And so he put his two passions together, which was events and festivals, and also sustainability, and started a festival to create what I think is quite a strong message.
Mm. And what's the future of sustainable festivals like this? Like, where can we go from here?
I think the ideal would be to get off generator power altogether and have everything run from solar and wind and completely renewable sources. But that's extremely difficult and challenging to do. And don't get me wrong, it's very admirable to be running off biodiesel and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's something to work towards, is everything from renewable sources. That'd be something.
And we're in the right country to do it, you know.
Yeah.
We have all this amazing sun. We've got this natural energy all around us, and yeah, we should use it.
Mm.
It's just the costs involved in running things from solar power is just phenomenal. They're so expensive compared that versus running stuff on more conventional methods. It's just, yeah, it's just, when the price drops, things will become a bit easier.
And there's not a whole lot of government support either around organisations who are trying to run things sustainably, which is quite frustrating.
Yeah, in the extreme.
Mm. Great to talk to you both about what looks to be a pretty amazing New Year's Eve party. And if people are still keen to get along to that, what should they do? Are there still tickets available?
Yes, there's tickets still available. The dates is 29th, 30th and 31st. There's a wicked lineup. It's going to be amazing. You can get tickets online. You can rock up on the 29th and buy tickets as well. You can also get there on the 28th too, pay an extra $15 and get yourself a good campsite. And you can come for a day, or you can come for all 3 days. And it really is going to be an amazing New Year's Eve party. I've got a very good feeling about this year.
Well, thanks heaps, both of you, and have a great Christmas and a great New Year's. It was really good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
So that's looking to be a pretty exciting New Year's Eve party. But right now, it's Christmas, and you might be wondering or thinking about how to make your Christmas a little bit more sustainable this year, or on the lookout for some environmentally friendly gift ideas. Earlier today, Tessa and I caught up with Renata Field from the Alfalfa House Food Co-op, and she gave us some great ideas for how to make really great Christmas food and presents.
Well, the number one thing you can do is avoid meat. Because meat has a huge impact upon the environment, particularly red meat. So there's, if you went vegetarian, then you could have a much more climate-friendly meal. Even seafood, which is the, Australian barbecue variety, can be really detrimental to the environment if you're not really careful about looking for what type of products you're choosing, making sure that they're local and fished sustainably, and so you can just ask the person you're buying it from about that.
Sure, and I know a lot of Australians love their meat on Christmas Day, love the turkey and the ham and all that sort of thing. So what are some alternatives, I guess, that people can go for?
You know, if you do want to go for meat, then be sure to choose something that's organic and locally produced. But much better idea is to go vegetarian. Some friends of mine really miss their baked dinner, and so they make like a vegetarian baked animal every Christmas. So they make like, a bit of a stew, and then out of puff pastry make a different animal every year.
Oh, cute.
It's really good idea. So the year I had Christmas with them, they made a big hog's head out of puff pastry. So there are ways you can do it. Obviously there's so many different vegetarian examples and ways of eating great food. There's lots of, fake meat. If you really need to have meat, that you can make nut loaf into the meat loaf. And, there's so much great fruit at the minute. Why eat meat when you can be eating cherries and mangoes? Mm. So great. Yeah.
So what are the other issues when talking about food and what to buy? Obviously there's organic and thinking about food miles and people reducing their carbon footprint. What are some of the other things that we can think about when buying food?
One of the other things to think about is where you're getting it from. So you can buy local or you can buy organic, but it's still from a large supermarket chain, and that chain doesn't have ethical values in other areas, other lines, other products that they sell. So another example would be at least your local food store or maybe a food cooperative who are not for profit and have much better ethics in terms of what they purchase.
And I know a lot of people at Christmas time are kind of keen, a lot of Australian people keen to have a traditional sort of Christmas similar to what they have in England and Europe. What are some of the issues with doing that in terms of what's available here?
Well, it's crazy because it's a typical thing to have in the middle of winter, something that warms you up and warms the house up, but obviously having the oven on all day to make baked potatoes is a little bit crazy when it's 40 degrees outside. So it's much better to be eating what's in season, and in Europe potatoes are in season, but here we've got lettuce, we've got great fresh produce, and things like zucchinis, cucumbers, tomatoes are all in season. Make a giant salad and you'd be doing much better job for the environment.
Cool. I'm feeling a lot less full afterwards.
Yeah. And then you can eat more fruitcake.
Ah, great.
Because that is a major tragedy of Christmas, eating too much savoury and not having space for sweet stuff.
It is. And then people just roll around the house afterwards and it's no fun.
Exactly.
So is fruit cake a good option for Christmas? Can you do fruit cake in a sustainable way?
Sure. I just made a vegan fruit cake for my family as a gift. It's really easy to make without eggs. Instead of butter, you can use oil. And instead of milk, you can use soy milk, Australian soy milk.
And any cool sustainable gift ideas for anybody out there buying really last-minute presents?
Go online, buy someone a goat. But Alfalfa House is open from the 27th of December, and we've got lots of really amazing things like hibiscus flowers that you can put in champagne and they open up and they look beautiful.
Oh, I love those.
Taste really amazing. Mm. And we've got this really great fair trade cocoa coconut butter. It's a bit like Nutella, but it's really good for you and the environment and the people in Peru who are part of a food cooperative making it.
Oh, yeah. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So you just touched on the hibiscus flowers. Often we overlook there's such an abundance of like natural spices and fruit and other things that are grown in Australia, but people rarely look into the options. What are some other examples apart from hibiscus flowers, and where could people perhaps get it?
We have a whole line of indigenous jams, for example, and herbs and spices. There's heaps of bush tucker foods, which are grown in Australia by indigenous communities, really good to support those communities. And these foods are local and really yummy. There's also heaps of weeds, for example, that you can eat, things that we think are terrible, like dandelion, for example. You can throw a few dandelion leaves in your salad, and they're actually a really good anti-carcinogenic.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, things like nasturtiums, they sort of grow like wild, but you can throw the flowers into a salad and they taste really amazing.
What would you recommend for any, I guess, New Year's resolutions for food?
Well, last year I made the vegan New Year's resolution, and I think it's a really good one because you can really cut your carbon print much more than deciding not to fly or... I mean, you should do it in combination with those things, but it actually does have a really massive imprint upon our earth. So I think being vegan or vegetarian is a really great New Year's resolution. Decide to be more thoughtful about what you consume. Consume less. That's a real good one. Make things yourself. Be generous. That's about a million you could make.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sound pretty nice.
I think the big one is to keep them too.
Yeah,
that's the hard one.
Totally.
I know you've run a lot of PermaBlitz outings in Sydney. Are there any more of those coming up?
Not in the near future, but sort of a bit later in the year. If you look online for PermaBlitz in Sydney, you'll find details about us. We've got a Facebook page as well, and yeah, we're really keen to find new properties and people who are interested in having food growing gardens. It's been really successful, so we want to keep doing that in the future.
Because I guess that growing food yourself is one of the most amazing ways to reduce your footprint. And
you can't get more local than that.
You certainly can't. Well, that was Renata Field from Ralph Alpha House Food Corp speaking to Tessa and myself. And yes, while it's pretty nice now to be having a bit of a break over Christmas and thinking about the new year, it's still important not to forget about what's happened this year and is definitely still going to be having an impact on next year, unfortunately, in some cases. Last week, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd gave us all a bit of a nasty shock that, well, rather soured my Christmas cheer when he announced emissions reductions targets of 5% of 1990 levels by 2020 in the White Paper, only promising to make a cut of up to 15% if other countries also sign up to stronger reductions. Now, that's incredibly low compared to the standards of other developed countries, but even the higher targets being proposed by some countries may not be enough. The Global Climate Network is a group of think tanks from key countries who come together to talk about climate change. They've just released a report called the Mitigation Gap Report that outlines how even some of the more ambitious targets for international action on climate change will form a gap between what developed countries are suggesting they'll do by 2020 to cut emissions and what the science is telling us is required to avoid dangerous climate change. Andrew Pendleton is a senior research fellow at the Institute for Public Policy Research in London and also coordinates the Global Climate Network. He spoke with the Third Degree's Nick Collins. And that was Andrew Pendleton speaking with Nick Collins. And I guess that's all we have time for on this Third Degree Christmas special. I hope you all have a really wonderful Christmas and join us all bright and early next week for the new year.